Welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and today is episode number 41. Got Duncan French with us. Duncan is the lead strength and conditioning coach for the English Institute of Sport. I met him a while back. He actually had me come over to the United Kingdom Strength and Conditioning Coaches Association, which is just like our NSCA, to speak at their national conference, and it was a fantastic event. It was eye-opening for me. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of great things that are being done internationally, and that's really where we talk. You know, we spend most of our time with this episode as we talk about some of the opportunities that United States or American strength and conditioning coaches have overseas, as well as, you know, if you're an overseas international strength coach, some of the opportunities that you may have here in the United States. What are some of the differences between the two? And then, you know, one of the things that I'm always fascinated about that we dive into in this episode is when you're working with sports that you don't really necessarily have any kind of a background in. A lot of these Olympic sports, squash, taekwondo, badminton, you know, all these different sports, you know, to be honest with you, I wouldn't know the first thing about, you know, if I had to go train them. And so we dive in a little bit about how Duncan goes about with a needs analysis, and really breaking the sport down to be able to contribute what our expertise are in the most efficient and productive manner. So it's really a fascinating episode. Duncan's a great guy. You'll enjoy him. I can't wait for you to get a chance to get to know him a little bit better. We always want to recognize our sponsors, IgnitionAPG.com. And eliteform.com. Make sure you check out their websites for more information about them. As well as, you know, we always want to make sure that we're getting our episodes to you in the easiest format. So if you are more of an auditory person and you like to listen to the episodes, go to iTunes and download the episodes that you maybe have missed. Subscribe so that you get future episodes, and then leave a rating and review while you're there if you would, on any of the episodes that you listen to. If you're more of a visual person, you can go to YouTube and subscribe to our channel there as well, and get access to all the videos of these episodes as well. So, excited to have you listen to Duncan. Sit back, grab your notepad, and take some notes, and we'll see you on the flip side. All right, guys, we're here with Duncan French. Duncan's a good buddy. I went over and spoke at the UKSCA conference. Shoot, it would have been about maybe 5 years ago now.
Yeah, sure.
Got a chance to know him. He's a crazy character. He's a good dude, and I wanted to have him on the show. So, Duncan, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to catch up and touch base with you again and get the opportunity to talk and you know, talk about strength and conditioning. That's what we do, right?
No doubt, brother. No doubt. Well, hey, Duncan, a lot of the guys, you know, they may not know you that are watching. Go in a little bit about your story, you know, kind of how you got into strength and conditioning, and then kind of, you know, the path that it's taken and where you're at currently.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I've been what I would call a strength and conditioning coach for about 14 years now. Like many of us, I was a keen athlete as a kid and never made it as a professional, but you know, really wanted to stay involved with pursuing gold medals and that winning mentality. So I can probably say I'm a failed athlete, like many of us, but I really wanted to stay in touch with sport and particularly elite level sport. So you know, I'm obviously here in the UK, and I did my degrees and things in the UK, but I really wanted to extend myself, and I pursued Bill Kramer over in the USA to try and come and do a PhD with Bill. Bill at the time is, you know, is recognized as one of the godfathers of strength and conditioning, and you know, lots of books out there and a ton of research. So he was someone that I really wanted to hook up with and spend some time with. So I managed to get out to, it was originally Ball State University when I first went out to start my PhD with Bill. We transferred across to the University of Connecticut after my first year. So I spent 3 years at UConn, which luckily enough was a massive basketball program, as you well know. And you know, spending some time with Andrea Hoody, who's now at Kansas, and you know, really well established and a great strength coach. Hoody introduced me to some of the work and Jerry Martin over there that they were doing in the weight room, and that kind of stoked my fires and interest in strength and conditioning. So And I spent a lot of time in the laboratories doing my PhD, but also, you know, in the weight room, spitting sawdust, getting after it with some of the athletes. And kind of that's where I blooded myself and really got, you know, enthusiasm for it. So, you know, I graduated from UConn in 2004, came back to the UK. And my first kind of recruitment in the UK was with the English Institute of Sports. So the English Institute of Sports, a little bit like the USOC, they work with all our Olympic programs and our elite athletes. And for 7 years, I was with Great Britain Basketball as the head of strength and conditioning with Great Britain Basketball. From there, I moved to the English Premiership with the soccer team, Newcastle United. I spent 4 seasons with Newcastle United, and now I'm back with the English Institute, managing the Northwest region as the technical lead for strength and conditioning, and also heading up the GB Taekwondo program as the head of strength and conditioning for GB Taekwondo. So it's kind of been a long story of the way I've ended up where I'm at, but you know, I've pursued the academic side of things, and I've gone through it that way, and I've also tried to pursue the coaching and keep abreast of what I'm doing on the applied front.
Absolutely, man. That's a great story. And it's, you know, what I heard in there was that you found a mentor, that you identified a mentor that you wanted to learn from, and you didn't really let anything stop you. You didn't let the pond stop you. You didn't let anything stop you. You went and decided to work with him, and it obviously led to a lot of different things in your experience. And talk a little bit about, you know, how important it is to find a mentor as a young strength coach.
I mean, that's an absolutely fantastic point you make. And I think it's critical. I think, you know, it's a big pond with lots of fish. And when you first start out, you're kind of a little fish. So you kind of got to, I don't want to say ride people's coattails, but you've got to get with the right people, the people that will support you and promote you and challenge you and develop you as an individual, as a person and as a coach. And yeah, I look back at my time with Bill Kramer as something that we'd do again tomorrow. And he's, you know, he's a critical part in my career path. And even today, he's still a massive person that I can speak to, I can get advice from, and get an understanding of where I should be going in life sometimes. So, you know, I think it's really important. And I think you make a good point that mentorship and advice and expertise and experience, more than anything, you know, taking people's experience, learning from their mistakes, making sure that, you know, you're bouncing ideas off them and doing things right, you know, it's critical.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I always mention to our staff is that if I can help you avoid some of the mistakes that I made, then you're going to be that much more advanced and you're going to arrive at the same spot quicker, you know, and that's an important deal. But, you know, as a head strength coach and I would get resumes all the time from strength coaches from around the world wanting to come to the United States and get some experience. You know, talk a little bit first before we go into kind of, you know, some recommendations for that. But talk a little bit about the differences between the United States and their strength and conditioning versus maybe international, you know, Olympic sport organizations.
Okay. I mean, in my experience, obviously, I spent 4 years in the US, so it's close to my heart and somewhere that I really kind of indulged myself in the culture of strength and conditioning in the USA. And it's such a well-established profession in the US, you know, with the collegiate NCAA system, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for strength and conditioning coaches, and there's a lot of history there from the days of Boyd Epley and before that, you know what I mean? So from my experience, the US has a really well-established profession as strength and conditioning coaches. When I've trimmed my travels around the world and I've spent time in Australia and throughout Europe and obviously in the UK, I think what's happened internationally is that strength and conditioning in the other parts of the world has come through sports science and physiology and biomechanics and those types of disciplines. And people have taken, you know, applied sciences, sports science or kinesiology, as you guys kind of call it, and kind of sprung off into strength and conditioning from that. So most of our strength and conditioning coaches have started as sports scientists rather than delving straight into the world of strength and conditioning. And that's kind of the one thing that I would say is the biggest difference at the minute, is that I think internationally a lot of the strength and conditioning coaches have you know, strong sports science background and have moved into strength and conditioning. Whereas I look at the US and I think there's a lot of guys that have gone straight into strength and conditioning in a well-established profession. And with no disrespect to anyone in the US, you know, in understanding how some of the pro teams are now recruiting sports scientists and things like that, you know, in the NFL and the NBA, there's more call in those pro leagues for sports scientists rather than just pure strength and conditioning coaches. So, you know, I think the standard around the world is fantastic. I think we've almost ended up at the same end point with different methods of getting there.
No doubt. I think that's, you know, there's obviously the positives on both ends. You know, the, you know, from a coaching standpoint and kind of, you know, being rooted in coaching, you know, the motivation and the resources and the things on those lines have been very well established in the United States for quite some time. And then obviously being more science rooted, I think, around the world, I think you're right. And I think the blend, you know, from learning from each other, you know, and you see it now with these high performance managers and in some of the professional sports and things, it's really coming on to be something special. And I think we can continue to learn. And on that note, you know, for the young strength coaches that are from around the world right now that are wanting to get experience in the United States, like you did, what would be your advice?
Well, I mean, it was kind of daunting trying to get into the USA, you know, because it is such a well-established structure over there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the biggest thing I did was be persistent. You know, it resonates with me to this day, and it's kind of one of my mantras is that when I was in one of my first meetings with Bill Kramer, his exact words were, "Duncan, I don't even know why you're here. I must have had a moment of weakness." You know, so not that he was putting me down, but, you know, the competition to get there and, sure. and you know, the understanding of what I was entering into, it was massive. So I think you have to try and be persistent, be positive. You're going to get a lot of doors shut in your face, and we all do, and that's life. You know, life can be tough sometimes, and particularly in our profession, which is now getting so competitive. And it's competitive because it's such a great job to do, and right. Lots of people want to do it and enjoy it and be part of it. But I think my advice is, you know, you have to look for something that makes you stand out from the crowd, and that's easy to say, and it's probably a bit cliche, but I do feel it's true. You've either got to be that guy that has developed relationships and networks and as a name that when you hear it pops up into someone's brain, you think, oh, that guy, I remember Duncan French. He spoke to me or he sent me a nice email or he was inquiring about something that I do. Right. You know, you need to establish that network, or you've either got to have a special skill set which stands out on an application or when you're talking to people that say, oh, hold on, you've got experience in, you know, strength diagnostics, that's really valuable to what I need. Or you've got some understanding of disability sport, and we need a guy that's really understanding of working with disabled athletes. So, you know, there's different ways you can try and stand out from the crowd, but I really think you've got to look at your portfolio, your resume, and figure out what jumps off the page if someone is trying to recruit you.
No doubt. And in the United States and around the world even, it's so competitive now. That, you know, I think you got to make it easy. You know, I think one of the biggest questions as a head strength coach for me was always, you know, all right, what's that entail? Is that a student visa? What kind of papers is that? What do I need to do? You know, do they fully understand that it's volunteer? All those types of things. And so I think in your correspondence, you got to identify, hey, I've already got my travel visa. I understand that it's an unpaid internship. I'm prepared. I save money, all those types of things. You know, I think then, you know, it makes it easier to where, hey, I want to have a conversation. But what you pointed out, I think is critical, because I think that there are a lot of people like myself that are looking for those strength diagnostics and expertise in that area, and maybe more rooted in the science. So, you know, when we're talking catapult and polar technology and things along those lines, if I can get somebody that can come over and show me how to really take that to the next level, I'm all about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so those are some things that I think would help stand up. Now, let's flip it now, you know, because, you know, this is something that I contemplated quite a bit, you know, for this year after, you know, getting let go of Tennessee and having another year of my contract. I thought about going over to, somewhere internationally to get some exposure and some experience. What would you recommend for a strength coach that's in the United States, a young strength coach in the United States that would like to get some experience at like a English Institute of Sport, an Australian Institute of Sport?
Okay, yeah, I mean, the great thing is that we're in a global market now, and all the different institutes or organizations or pro teams have lots to offer, and across the world, people are doing great things in the world of strength and conditioning. So, it's at the same time, there's a finite number of opportunities out there. It's not, it's not a never-ending market. So it is competitive, as we've talked about, and there's only a certain amount of opportunities for people. So, I think if people are looking to try and get experience in the UK, the big thing at the moment that we're looking for is strength and conditioning coaches that can show the ability to understand performance changing impact. So it's about how you change performance. And again, I'm not being flippant or trying to insult anyone, but it's easy to roll out a program of squats and bench press and shoulder press and cleans and these types of things. But ultimately, what we want to see is how people solve the problem of performance. Mm-hmm. What can we do in the weight room that can impact performance and change the game of what goes on the field or on the court? So we're looking for problem-solving coaches, coaches that can understand the end point, the goal of performance, whatever the sport may be, and how they implement a strength and conditioning strategy to affect that performance. That's critical, and that's a big theme in the UK, particularly at the minute, in terms of looking at, I don't want to say intelligent coaches, people that can break down the sports performance side of things and look at the nature of what they implement from a strength and conditioning strategy. That's a really big key at the minute in the UK.
Sure. So now, you mentioned it early on that, you're working with Taekwondo right now. And I know that wasn't familiar to you when you first jumped into it. When you start talking sports like squash and different sports that maybe you didn't play as an athlete, talk about how you attack that as a director of an English Institute of Sport, how you direct that sort of where you feel like you're believable to the athletes that you're going to help them improve in their sport. When you've never maybe even touched, maybe walked on a Taekwondo mat. And then, what was your assessment? How did you form that needs assessment, and kind of how do you develop your programs?
Again, it's a critical point, and this comes back to my point previously about problem-solving coaches is how you approach the problem. Right. Sports performance is a problem. It's an equation. We've got to kind of figure out the equation in the strength and conditioning world, and we've got to come up with an answer. It's the same with my time with GB basketball. Hey, listen, I'm a 5'7" white guy. No disrespect, but I don't look like the classic basketball player. So I walked into GB basketball, and the guys were like, "Okay, who's this guy? A little short ball guy." So the first thing you have to do, and the same with my time with Taekwondo, is you got to gain credibility. Every sport has a culture, and I think for me, before you even get into the world of changing programs and periodization and looking at monitoring and assessment, you've got to understand cultures and you've got to engage in those cultures. If I walk into an NFL team tomorrow, I need to understand that culture, the lingo, the way they talk, the daily routine, the expectations of commitment and intensity and these types of things, and what the guys talk about off the court or off the field. This is critical things which I don't think we can undervalue.
Right.
If you sit down with an athlete and engage with them in a conversation, now you can start to build relationships, and then you can start to develop that coaching aspect of, okay, where are we going to go with your performance development? So I'm a big believer in understanding cultures first and foremost. Secondly, I'm now working with a sport where one of the sole objectives is to kick people in the head, and I'm sport where you're trying to kick people in the head and looking at some of these very specific performance requirements and physical requirements. So then you've got to look at the nature of the sport and really engage in talking to coaches, looking at video, watching film, your needs analysis, breaking down the objective parameters that affect performance again. And that takes time. That's a lot of homework on your behalf. You've got to sit in a little dark room. You've got to kind of read the papers, read the research, look at what the film is saying. And for me, the best people to talk to are the technical coaches. You know, understand what the technical coaches are looking for, because I think that's, you know, that's a really important one. If it's a sport that you've never engaged with, and again, I use my working example of Taekwondo. I've never worked with a martial art like that before. But sitting down with the coaches, helping them to get my perspective of where I'm going with things from a physical development perspective,
mm-hmm.
and then, taking their advice in terms of what they see and what they're looking for from a technical and tactical perspective. So they're the two things I think are important, the culture, and then ultimately needs analysis and understanding the objective demands of the sport.
Sure, sure. Now, part of that is evaluation. You know, and figuring out where they're at currently and what, you know, for what they need to be able to perform their sport. So let's flip it a little bit where, you know, we're talking maybe American football, where it's not a individualized sport, you know, like a Taekwondo maybe, where you're having a wide gamut of needs analysis. I mean, you want your wide receiver to be as explosive and strong and as big as possible. But you also want your offensive lineman, your 6'8 guy, 6'9 guy, being as fast and agile as possible. So, you know, in that setting, if you were to take out kind of the preconceived and kind of already, you know, what's being done, how would you approach that from an evaluation standpoint?
Oh, I mean, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, right?
No, that's why.
You're the expert in the NFL, not me. So I wish I was there. But I think, you know, ultimately, you know, I look back at my time from the English Premier League in soccer, and the paradox that you're faced with is that you're training in a team environment. You're working with, you know, I have 40 guys, you've got 70 guys maybe, you know, you're in a team environment. But the paradox is that they're still individuals, sure. and they're going to progress at different rates. They come with different, you know, different genetic backgrounds and thresholds and windows for adaptation, and they've also got different training histories that's going to affect it. So in the professional world, where players move around teams, you know, you don't know what background people are coming from. So,
right.
you know, it is a challenge. I think what I would say to that is that you've got to, you know, in the team environment. I always look for what I call pillars of performance. So I'm going to break down my needs analysis, and I'm going to look at however many pillars of performance, physical performance, that can impact the outcome. So, you know, rate of force development for a Taekwondo player is absolutely huge. Not necessarily how high the force output is, you know, so it's not about how strong we can get them, it's about how quickly they can be reactive and produce a certain amount of force in a given time, say 200 milliseconds. So there's a pillar which is not peak force, it's rate of force development, very different. So now I'm starting to break down what I see as my determinants of performance. I've got my performance model that ultimately affects winning gold medals. What does it take to win gold medals? Or what does it take to win a football game, in your case? You know, to overcome our position. If I'm a wide receiver and I've got a DB marking me for 60 minutes, how can I ensure that every time I'm on the offensive side of the ball, I'm going to beat this guy and I'm giving myself the opportunity to catch a ball and get separation, right? You've got to break that down into what I call performance pillars. And I think that's the easiest mechanism and method that I use to try and do that.
Mm-hmm. What about with, like, technology now, you know, with so much stuff out there coming, you know, force plates and, you know, GPS and polar and, you know, heart rate variability and things along those lines, you know, maybe going to your English Institute of Sport, or maybe, you know, your experience with rugby or something along those lines, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that, you know, this is the fluff and this is these are the pillars?
Yeah. Hey, again, we're in the world of micro technology now as well, and you can put a sensor in a t-shirt or in a piece of garment of clothing, and you can get all this type of information from an athlete. Now, here's where I put my academic hat back on again and say, number one, the most important thing that you have to have is reliability of a measure, because if something is not reliable or reproducible, then it's not valid data, and it might be a nice, interesting piece of kit, But if it's not telling you, you know, the same thing every time you use it, then it's kind of worthless to me. So, number one, understanding the technologies and the measures you use is really important. And that might take some time to engage with statisticians or a local university to understand, you know, the reliability of pieces of equipment, or get your head in the literature and read some, you know, some manuscripts to understand what other people are doing around the world. I take heart rate variability. You know, there's a good friend of mine called Martin Bichat, who's a French physiologist who works out in Doha, who's done a lot of work on heart rate variability, and he's, you know, he's challenging some of our historical understanding of its use and its value. So, you know, you've got to look to experts in those fields.
Right.
Something like GPS, you know, Catapult or StatSport or some of these things, you know, they started out as 5 hertz units. Well, if you look at acceleration and deceleration mechanics, 5 hertz is simply not fast enough to get some of those assessments of actually the training load that's being played, or the competitive load that's being placed upon the athlete. Now we're starting to get to the 15 hertz units, and we're getting more accuracy of measure. But that's taking time. So they're just a couple of examples of using technology when it first comes out might sound great, but we've got to understand what we're looking at, what we're assessing, and the accuracy of the data we're getting back.
No doubt.
It's kind of a fluffy answer to your question, and I apologize, but you know, so much technology out there, force plates, GPS, heart rates, all this type of stuff. For me, if we can get an intrinsic and an extrinsic assessment of physical capacity or physical demand, that's kind of the gold standard. So, you know, internal heart rate, aerobic capacity, strength assessment, power, whatever. External movement dynamics, GPS, those types of things. So if we can combine those two kind of philosophies, you're starting to get towards a good model of understanding performance or training, you know, challenges.
Absolutely. Well, and the other part of that equation is if you can't communicate that or dumb it down enough or explain it like you'd be explaining it to a 12-year-old so that they understand it. You know, without their PhD exercise science degree,
and
it doesn't matter either, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's easy to alienate people with data, and that's the last thing you want to do, because then it really will become worthless if your head coach just doesn't even want to know what the GPS information's saying. It can be a really powerful tool when used correctly, but if used incorrectly, and you're trying to be a Johnny Smartass who's you know, showing off to the rest of the world about what he knows about GPS, well, you're kind of missing the point.
No doubt.
You're the expert. You've got to kind of digest it yourself, then you've got to put it across into a message for someone to comprehend and understand. And that can be a head coach. It can be an athlete. It can be someone in the media. It can be your team manager. It can be a performance director. It can be loads of different people. And you've got to be able to give that information across your medical staff or whoever, so that people can comprehend the information you're giving them.
Right. Well, you know, Mark Asanovich, one of my mentors, would always say, it's not always more. You know, more is not always better. It's what's the least amount you can do to get the same response.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. Like you said, identifying what the performance pillars are for that sport, and what's the least amount that we can do to make sure that we get them to be effective in each of those pillars.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not my saying, and I'm not sure who said it, but, you know, paralysis by analysis.
That's right.
And, you know, you can get swamped by data, and if you don't do it in a really efficient way, you can kind of screw yourself over a bit.
No doubt. Well, I know you're in the middle of home improvements. We kind of always end the show here with, you know, just kind of a lightning round of questions. So give us a quote that you live by, or apply it in your weight room somewhere.
Better never stops. All right.
Better never stops.
That's an easy one for me. You can always get better, and it's 365 days of the year.
No doubt. No doubt. What about you know, a book that you recommend for strength coaches to read? It can be in strength and conditioning. It can be out of strength and conditioning.
Recently, I've just read Natalia Verkhoshansky's re-edition of her, you know, father's original textbook, you know, Sports Strength and Conditioning for Coaches. It's a good little text, which I really enjoy reading. There's some great information in that. I think, you know, asking for a single book, it's a tough one because there's so much information out there and there's so much good stuff out there. But, you know, I look to some of the godfathers of strength and conditioning, and, you know, in all the time that strength and conditioning has been around, let's not kid ourselves, we're still doing a lot of the stuff that the guys were doing 70, 80 years ago. No, so you got something right. So, you know, I like to read those books.
Is there an app that you use with your athletes, or one that you recommend for your own productivity?
Yeah, I use UberSense. Is an app. It's kind of a motion analysis app, which I kind of use a lot, which is really handy in the weight room or on the field, just for with an iPhone or an iPad, just taking real quick shot stills or video of an athlete, and then instantaneously giving feedback, looking at joint angles and things like that. It's really easy to annotate. So UberSense is something that's quite cool.
Sure, that's a good one. What about, where do you go for your information now? I mean, obviously the journals and things along those lines, but is there a website that you kind of go to that you recommend or maybe just another content source?
Again, a good friend of mine has got a great website, Complementary Training. Is a website by a friend of mine, Mladen, over in Serbia. And he's got some really good information on there. He's doing some great presentations and interviews with some coaches. I know he's just done one with Mike Boyle over there. Okay. But he's also got some great periodization and programming information up there. So, yeah, Complementary Training is a website that's really growing, and he's doing a great job over there in Serbia. He's a really intelligent guy, and he's keen to get after it, and he knows that hard work is really important. He's a good guy at networking too. So, yeah, I'll give him a prop and promote his website.
There you go. All right. I see you. Well, Duncan, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, brother. I appreciate all the information and sharing with us. And I will link up all your social media and all that kind of stuff. Anywhere you want people to kind of go to be able to stay in touch with you?
Listen, I'm Facebook, it's Duncan French. I'm Twitter, Duncan French again. I've got DuncanFrench.com is a website. I apologize now to everyone out there who needs updating a little bit, but it's kind of a source of information. I'm going to start putting some blog work through the front of that, so I'm going to rebuild it. But DuncanFrench.com is my website, and you can contact me through there.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, appreciate you coming on, brother. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ron. Take care, everyone. Bye now.
All right, guys, a couple quick things before we let you go. As always, you can access in the show notes at ronmckeefrey.com/41. We have all the links and everything that we mentioned there, so that you can get all of that information. While you're there, join me in the comment section thanking Duncan for his efforts and sharing his insight with us in this episode, as well as give me any feedback on the show, direction, questions, all those things. I really do value that input and hold it in high regard. While you're there, also join our mailing list. That way I can get you updates each week as to who we have coming on the show, the latest Tribe TV episode, and any announcements that we may have in the old McKeefrey household. If you are just now getting into business or are having trouble finding an internship, strengthcoachbasictraining.com is a product that I created a while ago. Eight videos, eight modules that take you through kind of the early phases of a strength and conditioning internship. I'd recommend it to anybody that's just now getting in or just recently been in. We've had a lot of coaches go through it. A lot of coaches had tons of success after having gone through it. So I would encourage you to do that. I want to thank our sponsors again, eliteform.com and ignitionapg.com. Make sure you check those websites out. And check back next week for another great episode. And we'll make sure we deliver. Take care. Have a good week.